Apologies for the inconvenience. I was saying to Madia, if we had been better organized, Dineo would have been able to move earlier to rearrange the venue. The venue at 216, has always been said, it is very small. Apologies for all of that. That also, Dineo is off sick, that she couldn't make it today. The other dilemma that we are confronted with is that of the NA a debate, which I was also establishing. We are scheduled to meet the whole day to deliberate on this bill. However, there be this tragedy that has engulfed the country. We're not sure whether we'll be able to proceed for the whole day, but we shall stand guided by the powers that be. The third area that I thought I might wish to talk very briefly about, we've heard four of those submissions. Two or one was actually presented, and then the rest having been submitted in writing, also were deliberated upon. And frankly, we haven't heard much of any fundamental issues on the bill itself. Perhaps there could be some, you know, T's needed to be crossed and I's needed to be dotted, if there are any of such. But again, members also were encouraged to go through the actual text itself, both the principal act and also the bill itself, so that we satisfy ourselves. At the end of the day, this becomes our product, not so much of a product of the department, not so much of a product of the professionals. It is our product. We adopt that, and then the department implements. Just before we get on to the issues themselves as well, we have received some apologies. Minister has submitted an apology. Is this the legal advice? Has she tendered? Okay. We also got an apology from Ms. Nyalungu and Mr. Kebekulu. On the earlier point raised about the debate, the whip has just informed me that we're not necessarily going to be disturbed per se, precisely because the service starts at 12:30, so that we're not going to have an afternoon session. The service starts at 12:30, which then means it is precisely lunchtime, which we then are almost back immediately, if we are not concluded by that time. And then I must also mention, I had asked, in fact, forwarded this message to Dineo. Last week we received, for members, we received a notice via the Speaker's office. Once again, you know, being back to that role of ours, that of being a post office, we are requested to submit names for two vacancies in the National Agriculture Marketing Council. The notice there says by the 31st of August we should have been able to submit those two nominations. However, I did respond by way of saying that certainly the 31st of August might just be too short a notice. I've asked them to, the committee secretariat to provide the members with the relevant section of the Act that defines our role, and also, the correspondence itself. So we, before end of today's business day, we should be having those. And then perhaps one of the issues that we might wish to look into next week sometime will certainly be this one of those nominations. I take that as an order, members. Is that fine? Okay. we had some engagements on the submissions. I'm not too sure what approach we might wish to take. Under normal circumstances, the department is supposed to take us through in response to those submissions and discussions. If there are any fundamental areas that would necessarily mean some additions to the actual text of the bill, and then we should then be able to go through ourselves as members. Each paragraph, each page, for us to be able finally, you know, to say something about the bill itself. Mrs. Deng?
Chairperson, I think we discussed it all quite thoroughly. In order for us to save time, and if everyone is happy, that we ask that we start with the reading, and if there is something on a specific section, we stop at that stage and we discuss it and then continue with the reading of the bill.
If that is the view, that should be fine. There's no contradiction with what I was saying earlier on. Let's get the department to take us through if there are any fundamental areas that really require or warrant some major shifts, fundamentally or otherwise. Dr. Mdusane?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Maybe from the department side, we thank you once more for presenting us this opportunity to present the bill to the Honorable Committee. Regarding the inputs that the committee has received, we have looked at all the comments that were presented, and we believe that all the areas that were raised from the general public will be sufficiently addressed by the bill. Therefore, we did not think that there are any fundamental additions that we needed to make on the draft bill itself. But considering that there was a scheduled business, for today we have requested that our legal advisors, both from the State Law Advice Office, from the council and from the department, will take you through the bill on a close-by-close basis when that opportunity is presented. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, members, I think we should take that, we should follow that approach, and then we all have copies of the bill in front of ourselves. We are at your mercy.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Members, I'm Barry Beekers from the Department of Agriculture's Legal Section. There's only a few amendments, and I can go through them quickly, and we can stop, and then please the rest of the people must help me. At Clause 1, it deals with the amendment of Section 12. That's on page 2 of the bill, under the heading Other Committees.
Sorry, Chair, if I understand it correctly, we're going to start from the front. We must read every word from the beginning that says bill and just go through everything.
From the objects of the bill,
yes.
Itself. We're doing a word for word, if you like.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So I must just read the
perhaps
word
if
for word.
If we could just look at the actual object itself, whether we have anything to say specifically. And maybe that's the approach might we should take, and then follow that will be, you know, Section 1 type of an approach.
Thank you, Chair. You must be right, so we start with the object. Okay, thank you. The bill, to amend the Veterinary and Paraveterinary Professions Act, 1982, so as to provide for the establishment of an appeal committee and its functions to provide for the performance of compulsory community service by certain persons registering in terms of the Act, the inclusion of physical condition in the meaning of practicing veterinary profession and paraveterinary profession, and the registration of a person who has completed the relevant qualification but which has not been conferred, to provide for a registered foreign veterinarian to continue practicing by attaining either citizenship or permanent residency, to provide for continuing professional development, the suspension of registered persons and the termination of such suspension, to provide for the appointment and powers of inspection officers, the investigation of complaints and cost orders, and to provide for matters connected therewith. Amendment of Section 12 of Act 19 of 1982. Section 12 of Veterinary and Paraveterinary Professions Act.
And any comments on that object? I think they are straightforward. Thank you.
Section 12 of Veterinary and Paraveterinary Professions Act 1982, referred to as the Principal Act, is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection 1 of the following subsection. The Council may, and we took out from time to time, establish such other committees as it may deem necessary to exercise such powers and perform such functions as may take out again from time to time to be conferred or imposed upon or delegated to them by the Council. That one in order?
Are we fine with that? Just read the whole section.
Short, Chairperson, that is an old section, you're only removing those
That's correct, sir. That's correct.
We're fine with that, Section 1A. Okay.
B, by the substitution for subsection 3 of the following subsection. The Council shall designate a member of a committee who shall also be a member of the Council as the chairman, in brackets, chairperson of that committee. So chairman has just been replaced by chairperson. C, by the insertion of the following subsection after subsection 3. Unless an appeal is lodged in terms of Section 33A in the prescribed manner, a decision of a committee established in terms of Subsection 1 to institute an inquiry in terms of Section 31 or 31A into the conduct of any registered person shall be of first and effect from the date determined by that committee. This section is inserted because there is a new Section 33A that provides for appeals.
You fine? I must also mention that perhaps not for now, but later, we might have to get into a discussion on the council itself, as I said, but not for now, and its composition and all what it takes.
Thank you, Chair. D, by the substitution for subsection 4 of the following subsection, the provisions of section 10, 3, 5, 6 and 7 and 11.4 shall mutatis mutandis apply to a committee established under this section in terms of section 1. We just took out the words under this section and replaced the verb in terms of section 1. Clause 2. The following section is hereby inserted in the principal act after section 12, ad hoc appeal committees. The council shall establish an ad hoc appeal committee to consider any appeal lodged in terms of section 33A against the decision of inquiry instituted in terms of section 31 or 31A in the prescribed manner. An ad hoc appeal committee shall consist of a chairperson with knowledge in the practice of law for a cumulative period of at least 10 years and not more than two registered persons drawn from a profession similar to that of a registered person in respect of whose conduct an inquiry was instituted. An ad hoc appeal committee shall have the power to consider any appeal contemplated in subsection 1 and may, in the prescribed manner, confirm a decision, amend, vary or set aside the decision, remit the matter back to the council or a committee with such instructions as may consider necessary, or make such other order, including an order for cost, as it considers appropriate. A decision of an ad hoc appeal committee in terms of this act shall be final in force and effect from a date determined by that appeal committee, subject to review by a court of law with competent jurisdiction.
Mr. Steyn?
Chair, just one question. I can't remember if we asked this. How will this committee be established, or will there be a notice sent out, people invite to send in names, or how is this going to happen, the establishment of the appeal? I don't think we asked the question at that time.
Those are the only questions. The other question that I would have, a chairperson with knowledge in the practice of law for a cumulative period of at least 10 years. What if you have somebody less than 10 years? Aren't you supposed to say a period of no less than a set period of time? Because the at least 10 years may be anything between 1 and 10 years. A cumulative period of at least 10 years. At least, in other words, 10 and above.
That's great, sir.
But what if you have somebody who would have had a period of about 9 years or 8 years or something to that effect, and looking at this person, seeing a very good prospect out of this person. Have we pondered on that one? I'm not too sure about the 10-year period, at least.
Chairperson, I think the idea here is that the sort of person that you want to chair this kind of committee must at least have a service of 10 years. In other words, 10 years experience. I think it is correct that one must determine a time frame. You can either bring it down or you can even push it up. But then there must be some time frame that you put into the act. Otherwise, if you leave it as a sort of a discretion, that would be problematic. Because, of course, you do want somebody that has some or other form of experience in matters of law. So I would think that the principle here should be that we should determine a time frame. It's either 10, it's either 5, it's either 7 years, whatever. I think 10 years is a reasonable period for a person to have accumulated the type of experience that lends that person eligible to serve on a body like this.
I saw your hand, Mr. Keith. Mr. Van Dalen?
Yes, I just want to say we must remember this is an appeal committee, so the chairperson should be higher ranked than the person on the bottom that made the actual decision, because he must review that decision and even overturn it. So if it is somebody that is younger, it might not carry that. So you need somebody with quite a bit of knowledge on that. I just wanted to tell you that.
Mr. Gill?
Yeah, no, I hear what my colleagues say, but I tend to, in my mind, if you have a young person who has that experience, aren't we going to say you're discriminating against it, who's gained that experience, because the 10 years, I'm not quite comfortable. If you, I mean, it just does not gel well.
Mr. Banga? You're still thinking, I can see you.
Yeah, but you see, the intention is clear. It's saying you need a 10-year, at least, accumulative experience that you have accumulated, which I don't have necessarily a problem with that. But where I do have a problem is when we put utterances like a young person. You see, now a young person can have 10 years experience, but doesn't necessarily mean you discriminate against that young person. Therefore, that one should be rejected. That little part assertion should be rejected, because you can't discriminate against a young person, the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. As long as I have 10 years, I qualify to sit there. Yeah, thank you.
I don't think the the intention is being challenged. The intention is noble, but you are equally saying to yourself, what is the object of this, so that you are able to say at the end of the day, you certainly do have that experience that is accompanied with a sharp mind, if you understand what I'm talking about. Because at times, you know, you have people who might have accumulated a particular experience, but not being equal to the sharp-mindedness in approaching any particular issue, if you understand what I'm talking about. So that the balance is covered in this particular instance. You wanted to say something?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the aim of the proposed insertion 12A2A is not to exclude any particular person, but to set a yardstick. Number one, the reason for putting a period is for experience, not generally, but especially in the appeal process. I think when the Honourable Member spoke of young, I think he referred to young in the profession of practicing law. We say that a person with at least 10 years cumulative experience would have good practice in law when it comes to the appeals process, so as to lend that knowledge to this process and be able to help take it further as opposed to hinder it. When it comes to deciding on whether a person who does not maybe have 10 years but maybe has 9 years cumulative experience, I think depending on the candidates that we have before us, we'll be able to make the decision. It's not just the years, but the type of experience that has cumulatively been acquired by this person. So we look at the whole picture as opposed to just the number of years, as to whether this person is suiting the reason for incorporation into the appeal committee. I think the first question was, how will the committee be established? Council makes recommendations on members from the profession who will be able and is au fait with the process of the inquiry bodies that take place at council, with the disciplinary procedures. Although we will be asking for or inviting nominations, it won't be done per inquiry body session or per appeal committee session. The reason being is that we cannot hold the matter further back pending nomination and composition of this body. We have to look at it upon recommendation of the pool of nominations that we have, so that we can comprise the body timelessly or within a reasonable time after the appeal has been received.
That explanation settles the question. But if you look at 12A2AB, it says here, not more than two registered persons That's the composition of the committee now, this ad hoc committee. Not more than two registered persons drawn from the profession similar to that of the registered person in respect of whose conduct an inquiry was instituted. So in short, you can't go and bring a total outsider who knows nothing about this particular profession and bring such a person to adjudicate something that has to do with a specific profession. So there is sufficient safeguard here, in my estimation, that on the one hand you have a person who has a cumulative experience of 10 years who can be appointed as chairperson. In this particular case, it does not say that that person, that the two other persons, must have a particular period of experience. All it says is that they must be drawn from the same type of profession as that which the person against whom the conduct inquiry is taking place. So it covers us both ways. I don't think we should actually change this particular clause. I want to pay respect to those that drafted it. I believe that they gave thought to all the pros and cons.
Maybe as you respond, if you could also just clarify simply as to why ad hoc.
Chairperson, the procedure, if I may start there, I will come with that. The procedure, Chairperson, for appointing this ad hoc committee will be published by the Minister for Resources in the form of regulations. That is why it says there in the prescribed manner. It means that they will prescribe that procedure through regulation. As you know, Chairperson, that the regulation are submitted into Parliament in terms of the Interpretation Act, and if the committee sees something, for instance, which not right about the regulation, the committee will always still have something to correct on those regulations, if that's the case, because you consider those regulations time and again. The ad hoc committee, each person in the department might come in, but the way it is, it means that it will be for a specific conduct of a particular member. You will have, for instance, years that will pass that members behave appropriately and there was no need for the committee. For instance, if you've got a standing committee and you will have people just sitting there doing nothing, but at the end of the day they will be getting paid from the fiscals, you know. So you want to ensure that it will be for that particular purpose of that conduct of the member. That is why it's an ad hoc committee. Then after that, after it has completed its work, then it is abolishing all of that. Mm. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chair,
the lady, you see, made a statement when we are responding from the issue of terms, which I felt a bit uncomfortable with it. When she said that we might have candidates that have a period of 9 and might consider other things. I'm not a lawyer, but when you read the legislation, if you say 10 years, 10 years, full stop, and now you cannot maneuver other things, meaning it will be illegal. Now, if we say 10 years here, we must be able to say, we're talking 10 years flat, to guide those who will be implementing the legislation. No other things. Our understanding will be that those other things, through that experience, would help them. But the second issue, you see, now, as people were talking here, they were talking about this appeals committee as a committee that it should be at a higher level, with people with expertise and experience. And now, the point B there, my worry now is the people who specialize in this field in which the person has been charged, we don't care about them if they have expertise. We only care about this lawyer who necessarily might not have come from this discipline. Now, the two other registered persons drawn who are going to form this board were not regulating. If it's a first-year student who just graduated from a university, can it be appointed that person? Why, in this aspect, be those who serve in that profession are not regulating and saying the required experience of this individual also? Because I believe this is the last appeals committee. That's why you need more experience to the chair. But if the people who serve with the chair do not have experience, how do they give proper guide to that decision that is going to be taken about the future career of an individual? Now, why in this aspect of those who practice in this discipline, we are not regulating? I just want to get a sense.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Well, the legal guy, the chairperson with 10 years experience, he must organize the whole hearing and see that the process is in order. But for the other two members in a similar field, like as a veterinarian, they must be like the witnesses. They must give evidence why this guy did wrong or what did he do right. So that's my understanding. If state law like Pfizer will come in, if he had something else to add, please.
The last register of is Dr. Mutasan.
I think that is right, what Barry is saying. But there is also a thinking that should come behind the understanding that in most cases we will be dealing with highly specialized procedures. And if an appeal is on a specialized procedure and they call somebody who's not a specialist in that area, the recommendation might not be that correct in terms of exactly identifying what went wrong. So that is why there is a need for, in addition to the experienced adjudicator or chairperson of the ad hoc committee, that need for a person to be able to say exactly what went wrong and how should it have been done before. But the other comment that I wanted to make earlier was maybe also adding on to what Mr. Ngutu has said on how the ad hoc committee is going to be formed in a prescribed manner as said, but there will also be consultation with the stakeholders, I think that was said, but also the party that is bringing the appeal will also be consulted. From the understanding of how this appeal committee is normally formulated. I'm not sure if that specialist issue has been addressed, and maybe we should also bring in the council to help them.
Thank you, Dr. Mr. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. When we look at that section, particularly section 12A2B, I think we must look at it not only with regards to the veterinarians, but there's also para-veterinary professionals. If you recall in the last sessions, I gave an example that if you have, for example, a vet with special interest in wildlife, therefore it means the two members that would be part of that appeal committee, it's got to be vets with special interest in wildlife, or it's got to be recognized, registered specialist in wildlife. The problem, if you give, for example, you say you include years of experience there, and you say 5 years experience. The problem may be you have a vet who maybe has got 6 years experience, who's appealing. Then if you just use the years, you might end up being forced to appoint a person with 6 years experience but is not a specialist in wildlife. That is why the word, if you look at it, similar, then that covers you, whether it's a vet or an animal technician or veterinarian. Thank you.
Madam?
Honourable Chairman, the yardstick when professionals are brought before a tribunal for malpractice or negligence or whatever the case may be, the yardstick is the reasonable person, the reasonable veterinarian, the reasonable nurse. and that is why the adjudicator should not be specialists but peers. So you want the adjudicators to be peers of that person but not specialists, because specialists have their own yardstick. And the question is, what would the reasonable professional would have done? Thank you.
Just reminded by Dr. Mutusane here about, you know, any, you know, specialized procedure that the veterinarians might be exercising on. And I'm just imagining here that that could be equally be, you know, your B, you know, specialist applying a particular procedure, you know. And just can imagine, you know, a procedure on a B. Members, you can continue. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Well, Section 20 deals with the qualification for registration in terms of the Act, and that's why we inserted the new Section 20A. The following section is hereby inserted in the Principal Act after Section 20, Compulsory Community Service. From the date of commencement of Section 3 of the Veterinary and Paraveterinary Professions Amendment Act, 2012, any person registering for the first time to practice a veterinary profession or paraveterinary profession in terms of this Act, shall perform in the prescribed manner compulsory community service in veterinary professions or paraveterinary professions for a period of 1 year, and shall, upon completion of such service, be entitled to practice the profession for which he or she is registered. 2. The Minister may, after consultation with the Council, prescribe the performance of compulsory community service contemplated in subsection 1, including but not limited to the registration of persons for compulsory community service, the condition of employment pertaining to persons who perform such service, the places at which compulsory service is to be performed, and the conditions subject to which the service may be interrupted. The Minister may, after consultation with the Council, prescribe the circumstances under which a person contemplated in subsection 1 may be exempted from performance of compulsory community service.
Yeah, the intention was to take care of section 3, which he has just done. Any questions?
Chairperson, I would just like to understand. I think the objective here is to create a framework for compulsory community service. I think that's the underlying principle that we're dealing with. Now, can you just explain? You have here, for example, in line 35, you have shall perform, any person who is registered for the first time, whatever, for the veterinary profession, shall perform in the prescribed manner compulsory community service. Now you go to line 40. The minister may, after consultation with the council, prescribe the performance of compulsory community service, blah, 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 blah. And then again, you look at subsection 3 in line 49. The minister may, after consultation with the council. Now, I don't know. I would just like to understand this properly from a legal perspective. When you are creating legislation to provide for a specific issue, and that is community service, that's your overall intention. You have a council that you have recognized. So let's put it this way: that council is the council of experts in the particular field. You've recognized them. Now you may, after consulting them, decide to do 1, 2, 3, 4. My problem is that the overall objective is to have community service. Now, why should it be may and not shall? In my view, it should actually read that the minister shall, after consultation with the council, prescribe the performance or of compulsory community service or whatever, whatever, unless there is a compelling legal reason why it should not be shall. I would like to understand that very clearly, because the objective to me is clear.
Yes, Chair, I was also on the same issue of may and shall and whatever. I just wanted to ask if we read it with just 20A1 from the date of commencement and we don't discuss the may, the minister may, what is going to put something in place if the minister doesn't do it? If we change the may or we leave it, I'm trying to find out if we leave it in May and the minister does not send anything out, everything just happens. How is it going to happen if the minister does not put anything in writing? So will the word may, if we leave it in May and the minister for some instance decide not to do anything, have a huge impact? Will something happen so that people can then do the compulsory service? I'm just taking this, Chair, because I also had that in mind, but maybe there is something in place, something else in place, that this requires the minister under specific circumstances to send out a notice about something. For instance, people that cannot do it in a certain year for some reason, whatever. But if she doesn't do, I'm now saying it, she, but if the minister does not send out a notice this year, for some reason, everything will happen in any case. I don't know if I'm making myself clear, but I had it in mind that there would be something in place after this act, in any case, for the process to start, but in specific circumstances, the minister then may prescribe certain reasons why people cannot perform the functions in certain places.
And the question again related to that could be these students, upon completion of, you know, studies, circumstances beyond their control compel them not to be at work, compulsory community service. If you had a comment, I'm not too sure whether that prescription of any performance would refer or would relate to regulations that are still going to be put in place. If you could just clarify on that one.
Sometimes we tend to think that whenever shall and may are used, for instance, the shall is always imperative, it's peremptory, it's mandatory. But sometimes there's a jurisprudence on that we always look at the context of the statutory provision on that respect. With regard to subsection 1, chapter 220, it says there that it shall, in other words, is that everyone who wants to practice as a veterinary or paraveterinary counsel must have performed this compulsory service. That one is clear. Then when it comes to subsection, for instance, then 1, may is put there so that, for instance, even if the minister hasn't made the regulation in terms of that compulsory service, those things that are listed there, but at the end of the day, those people will still be compelled to do the the compulsory, the community compulsory service. Now, if we put Charles, sometimes if we put Charles Chairperson and then the minister hasn't prescribed or hasn't made the regulation. So it means then, because of that, of inaction from the minister, then those people can't be compelled to do the thing because it's not you know, they are not prescribed, so it's not on their fault. Then they can just proceed and practice, you know. But even if the minister doesn't prescribe those, doesn't make those regulations, those people will still be compelled to do the community service. So it gives just the minister that prerogative. If he sees that, okay, it is necessary, maybe the thing is not coherent, the way people are doing it, it's always the last resort to come with the regulation. That doesn't stop the minister from doing that. So that is why it's put as may, so that even if the minister doesn't prescribe the terms of the community services, those people will still be compelled to do that, you know. So that is the thing. I don't know if I...
Ms. Debra?
Chairperson, that is precisely my problem. Problem is that on the one hand, you shall do compulsory service. On the other hand, there is no framework under which that compulsory service shall be executed. And that, to my mind, is very unfair towards the individual who is on the one hand told, you shall do this. On the other hand, the minister does not prescribe, for example, the registration of persons for compulsory community service. There's no prescription. May create those prescriptions of performance. May. And then, for example, the conditions of employment pertaining to persons who perform such service. What if, for example, let's take the first intake after this becomes law, and there is no compulsion on the minister to create the prescriptions, then there's a problem. As for example, if there is nothing that says that, look, the conditions of employment shall be that you shall work, say, 7 hours a day or whatever, and in terms of this compulsory service, they are made to work 18 hours out of the 24 hours, for argument's sake. I feel that there must be some other way to get the minister, whoever the individual is, that's not important. Issue here is that this law, when it gets onto the statute book, is not for today and tomorrow. We are going to have a problem with this one. And I'll tell you what the possible aftermath can be. And that is that such young people, if they don't get security of employment in this compulsory capacity, may decide to rather quit the country. And we may have those are the unintended consequences that I spoke of the other day that could happen. So, Chairperson, in my view, it should read that the minister shall, after consultation with the council, have worked out all these things and say that, look, man, your pay shall be so much per hour or whatever, and the places at which the compulsory community service is to be performed, it should be spelled out in some or other form. And that can only be done if the onus is placed on the minister to do it, not the discretion. Unfortunately, Chairperson, this type of discretion in this particular instance, I promise you, if it goes through like this, will have unintended consequences. And as I say, Chairperson, the moment you place somebody in compulsory service, that person should know what that person's entitlements are, what that person may have and may not have. And if you don't do that, you can't leave this in the air, as this is too discretionary. I mean, you may have a very committed minister that sees to it that the law is carried out, but I mean, let's accept, Chair, that you look at very many other departments. There are certain things that are not done, and suddenly you have a crisis on your hand. So I feel, Chairperson, that we must give serious attention to this. It's one word only, but it has ramifications. Thank you.
Mama, curious, Ms. Wan.
Chairperson, thank you. Even though we are not lawyers, but I don't know why it is difficult for the drafter when they draft such things like the bills. Always they use me. You know, according to me, it's like may and shall. May is very light. You know, it's an option. But if you say shall, that it has a wave in it. But I don't know. Always when they draft these things, they may. May is like may. It may not. It may not. And it's not a strong wind. I don't know when they draft it, because they are lawyers, they know these things. And between this way, and why can't they look for shall?
Mr. Banga, thereafter I will break 10 minutes for tea and then come back. After Mr. Banga.
Yeah, I think I want to agree with Mr. Abrams and Mama there. Because I put myself in a scenario where the minister doesn't meet these conditions. And students are compelled to go through this process because the act will compel them. Now, it makes me very worried why the students also are not here. Now it brings me back that really we talk about something very important, and the very same students are not part of the that can compel them. You know, this thing reminds me of what is happening currently in students of higher learning, in service training. If you have not gone to that in service training, you don't get your qualification. Do they understand? Now, if the minister is not compelled to do this, the minister is still busy, doctor, with what we're saying, the plan. Still busy, the department. There's no plan. But we've passed this act. But those people are compelled to have done this. Meaning, they are victimized at the same time. I think of my friend who have an electrical engineering course qualification, but they have not done his in-service training. He cannot do anything. You know, you see now, I'm worried that the students who are deciding over this, we must find a way, Chairperson, to compel the minister. Now, I can even, people see here, people using semantics, may and shall. The people shall govern. You didn't see the people may. The people must govern. You see, we must say, the most stronger word, the minister must. The minister must. Therefore, we must put that the minister can only be able to implement this compulsory service if having implemented or adopted or drawn certain regulation that needs this. Meaning, you cannot compel the students and put the student into hostage whilst she has not performed her responsibility to make sure that the conditions are conducive for the people. Because remember, it's a, you know, this thing of community service. It comes from our president when they were in the youth movement, our contribution to the nation. Now, we are contributing, the youth is contributing where? To the nation by participating in community service. Now, the nation has a responsibility to lay a foundation that is conducive for people to voluntarily participate in a community service. They understand? Therefore, the minister must lay first the conditions to be conducive, and then the nation responds to a call for national service. Therefore, I'm saying we must be very strict in this aspect to compel the minister to perform something before we put a gun to the student that you must go there. Thank you.
As we come back, if you could also just talk very briefly about, you know, the regulations as well. Perhaps some of these issues talk directly to those regulations. Okay, can we just break for 10 minutes and then we back to some?